along with some of his thoughts. And if you need any help with that, you just let me know, and I'll be happy to get some guys to assist. Some of the thoughts are put away, but not all of them. Mount Pisgah really isn't much of an ascent, and ranks as the 1,336th highest mountain in Wyoming. But the real puzzle is that although the cemetery that has its name is in Gillette, the mountain itself is actually near Newcastle and is not even in Campbell County. Mount Pisgah Cemetery is the crown jewel of the county cemetery district and is located in the heart of the city. Atop one of the highest points in the town, the sprawling 57-acre resting place is a beautiful spot in a not-so-lovely city with enough majestic old cottonwoods towering over the place that when they release their seeds in May and June, you would swear it was snowing. With rolls containing 5,600 burials, it has monuments dating back to 1879 and graves older than anyone can remember. As I parked the truck in front of the large Victorian-style house next to the cemetery, Vic turned and looked around the place. Mount Pisgah in a pig's ass. This is a hill at best. It and the slope near Newcastle are named for a mountain in the Bible that's in a region directly east of the Jordan River and just northeast of the Dead Sea, usually referred to as Mount Nebo, the highest of the Pisgah Range, a cluster of hills to the west of the Transjordanian Plateau. I dredged up the chapter and verse. And Moses went up from the plains of Moab unto the mountain of Nebo to the top of Pisgah that is over against Jericho. Deuteronomy, chapter 34, verse 1. She pulled the door handle and slipped out, holding the suicide door open for Dog.
Jesus!
No. I did my best Yul Brynner imitation.
Moses!
Was your mother some kind of religious fanatic? No, but my grandfather spent most of his dotage reading and memorizing passages from the Bible, and since I spent most of my summers on his place, it rubbed off. We looked up at the gate of the cemetery, and, as Dog did his business, at a strong snow beginning to curtain the landscape. Pisgah is actually Hebrew for high place, but lost its meaning over time and became the name of the range. She thumbed through the files, holding them close to her chest and moving Roberta Payne to the top. More developments from the photographic mind? No, I had a Jewish girlfriend in college. You'd be amazed at what you can learn when motivated and with the right teacher.
I bet.
She glanced up. It was silting snow, which usually meant a foot or two before you knew it. Have you checked the weather lately? I glanced around and noticed, indeed, that the landscape was sporting a contiguous white cloak. Never one to ignore the obvious, I nodded. It's snowing. She trudged toward the gate of the cemetery. It's snowing a lot, and this looks like one of the ones that's going to last for a few days, bury everything, and shut down every airport in the high plains. It looked as though the snow was smothering the land, almost as if the flakes were holding their breath in a snow globe. It's a strange snow. She glanced back at me from the gate, the tarnished gold embers dampening as if she were a centurion looking across Hadrian's Wall. Yeah. A voice called out from behind us.
You people are supposed to have that dog on a leash, and he's not allowed on cemetery property.
We turned in tandem and could see a tall woman wrapped in what looked to be an Afghan who was standing on the extended porch of the Victorian.
I'll get him, ma'am, but do you mind if we have a word with you?
She stood there for a few seconds more, stooped to pick something up, and dusted the snow away by slapping whatever it was on her leg. Then she eyed my truck with the stars and bars, about-faced, and went back in her house. Vic looked at Dog, still irrigating the fence.
I'll give you a biscuit if you go shit on her lawn.
He came when I called him, and I popped open the door, allowing him egress into his home away from home, and led the way toward the mansion with Vic trailing behind.
How about I shit on her lawn?
Stepping up onto the porch, I glanced back at her as I removed my hat and slapped the accumulated snow off. I don't suppose you'd like to wait in the truck with Dog?
And not play with the radio? No, thanks.
I don't want to miss any of the fun, and anyway, I do get cold. I reached up, knocked the heavy knocker, and noticed that the grand old lady of 8th Avenue West was in need of a coat of paint, along with a puttying and sanding. After a moment I could hear someone moving inside the house, then the sound of the chain being put on the door, then it opening about 4 inches. "Hello, Mrs. Payne, I'm Sheriff Walt Longmire, and this is my undersheriff, Victoria Moretti." She wedged her face into the opening to get a better look at me through the thick lenses of her bifocals, and I figured her age to be somewhere in her 80s. A little old to have a daughter Roberta's age.
"I don't know where she is."
I waited a moment before responding. "That would be your daughter?" There was a noise from back in the house, and she glanced in that direction.
"She's dead."
I gestured toward the papers in Vic's hands, as if they had something to do with what we were talking about. "I understand you're petitioning the courts for a declaration of death in absentia, so we were wondering if you'd come across some information as of late that might have led you to believe that she was deceased."
"No."
She looked past me, trying to read the words on my truck as the noise from within grew louder.
"What county did you say you were with?"
"I didn't, ma'am, but we're with the Absaroka County Department."
"And what are you doing here?"
"There have been some other women who've gone missing, and we're thinking there might be a connection between them and your daughter." The noise had reached a pitch to where I could now tell that it was a tea kettle.
"My daughter is dead."
"So you were saying, but if you'd allow us inside—"
"I don't have to allow you people in my home."
I listened to the screeching and figured I had an opening, so to speak. "No, you don't, but I was hoping we could ask you a few more questions, and it's kind of cold out here." I looked past her. "Is that a tea kettle on?" She paused for a moment and then, in a disgusted manner, disconnected the chain and pulled the door open, allowing us in. It was a large entryway with a sweeping staircase that led to the second floor. It had been a beautiful house in its day, but peeling paint, worn carpets, and distressed furniture indicated that the place had gone to financial seed. Looking down just a little at Sadie Payne, still with the afghan wrapped around her shoulders, I got more of an idea of just how tall she was. "Beautiful home." I paused as I noticed the condensation from my breath was almost the same inside the house as it had been outside. "You can get that kettle if you'd like." She nodded her silver head and then started down a short hallway.
"You people stay there, and I'll be right back."
She exited through a heavy swinging door with a window in it. Vic took a step and pushed one of the partially open doors that led to the parlor a little further.
"It's fucking freezing in here."
"Welcome to Miss Havisham's." I glanced up the steps but couldn't see anything. "I don't think she's got any heat on." Vic glanced back at me and then rolled her head to indicate that I should have a look through the doorway where she stood. With a quick take to the kitchen, I stepped back and peered over my undersheriff's head into an empty room. There were a few sheets lying on the floor, but other than that, there was nothing. We heard some noise, and both stepped toward the chair and sideboard, the only pieces of furniture in the entryway. The noises continued, but she didn't reappear. My attention was drawn to the mail that was lying on the table. It was a little wet, and obviously what she had picked up from the porch. One piece was opened, and I noticed that it was from First Interstate Bank, notifying Roberta Payne of her withdrawals from a trust account and dating back to the beginning of last month. At that moment, Sadie re-entered from the kitchen with a mug of tea, but I turned and leaned against the sideboard so that she wouldn't notice my snooping. "Mrs. Payne, you say you haven't had any contact with your daughter since her disappearance?" She sipped her tea from a coffee mug, the tag from the bag fluttering in the drafty house.
"No, none whatsoever."
Wishing that I'd had time to look at the statement a little more closely, I quickly made up a story. "Well, I was talking to Chip King over at First Interstate, and he said there had been some activity in Roberta's trust account as of late." She dropped the mug, and we all watched it bounce off the floor with a loud thunk, the contents spilling on the hardwood floor, teabag and all. I stooped and picked up the pottery, which somehow had not broken, and scooped the teabag as well. "Here you go." Sadie Payne stared at me for a few seconds, and then snatched the cuff from my hand.
I want you people out of my house.
Okay, but I'm going to be back pretty quick with a representative of the Campbell County Sheriff's Office, and— her voice became shrill.
Out! I want you people out of my house!
And somebody from over at First Interstate Bank. She held the mug as if she might throw it at me, but I'd had things thrown at me before, and I wasn't that intimidated. Maybe if you tell me what's going on with your daughter. Her head dropped, and she placed a hand on the table for support.
I've asked you people to leave my house, and if you don't leave, I'm going to call the sheriff's department of this county and have you removed.
All right. She stared at me.
I mean it, mister.
Sheriff. Sheriff Walt Longmire. I waited a moment before adding, That's fine. I'd just as soon get some more people over here to get to the bottom of this. She took a deep breath and sat the mug down, pulling the afghan around her a little closer. She gripped the blanket in a distracted manner, her fingers poking into the holes of the thing as she pulled it tighter. Vic had given a name to the technique that we both used when questioning suspicious persons. I called it waiting, whereas she called it running the Zamboni, a term she'd brought from Broad Street, Philadelphia, where her beloved Flyers played. Ask your question, and then let the machine polish the ice.
It's me.
Her voice had been so small, I had to ask, Excuse me?
I'm the one that's been making the withdrawals.
I glanced at Vic and then back to her. You?
Yes, me. I thought that if I kept the amounts under $200 that no one would notice.
I thought about the statement that showed that most of the withdrawals were well above $200, and let my eyes scan the decrepit house. The money is Roberta's? She kept her head down.
A trust that her father left for her, but I've been using it to live on.
For how long?
For a month now. There isn't any other money than what's in that trust.
And that's why you've been trying to obtain a certificate of death in absentia for the last few weeks? She nodded, and took off her glasses, wiping what I assumed were tears.
Yes.
I could feel Vic's eyes on me. Mrs. Payne, it's clear that you've gone through a lot of difficulties lately, and we're not really here to add to your burdens, but we need answers. We're just interested in your daughter, her disappearance, and the connection it might have with these other women. I pulled out one of my cards and placed it beside the stacked mail and then shoved my hands in my pockets. We'll leave your home now, but if you do think of anything that might help us in the investigation, I'd appreciate it if you would give us a call. Vic stepped in front of me and picked up the card, writing her cell number on the back and then handing it to the old woman.
Mrs. Payne, call this number and you'll get a faster response.
We walked out of the house and down the steps as my undersheriff punched my arm.
Okay, that's two visits that make me want to cut my wrists. Is Campbell County always this uplifting?
You should have seen what it was like before you got here.
I improved your spirits?
Yep.
I have that effect on people.
She pulled out her phone and looked at it.
Uh-oh.
I pulled up and we looked at each other from across the hood of my truck.
What? Missed call.
Patrolman Dougherty?
No, your daughter.
I froze, both figuratively and literally. Katie? She thumbed the device.
Wait, there's a text.
She read it and looked at me.
You're in trouble.
How bad?
Bad.
Bad, bad, or just bad?
She began reading from her phone. Dad, where the hell are you? I've been calling the office. The doctors are talking about inducing and wanted to know if I had a magic number as a birth date for the baby, but I told them I was waiting till my father got here. The doctor I want for the delivery is only available one day this weekend, and I want to make sure you're here. Would you please call me right now? Signed, Your Very Pregnant Daughter.
She looked up at me. I climbed in my side as she opened the door on the other. That's not so bad.
Closing the passenger side door behind her, she continued reading. P.S. Now, or I'm going to kill you.
She glanced at me. The now and the kill are underlined. I nodded.
P.P.S. I mean it.
She lowered the phone and studied me.
P.P.P.S. I really mean it.
She smiled. Speaking from a personal standpoint, whenever a woman uses more than a half dozen exclamation points, 4 underlines and 3 postscripts, you are in deep fucking shit. Give me the phone. She dialed the number and handed the device to me. I put the thing to my ear and held it there as I fired up the truck and hit the wipers, barely able to move enough of the snow to clear the windshield. Did I see an Office Depot back near the Douglas Highway in our travels? Why, you want to go buy a chair to hit Sadie Payne with? She thrust her chin toward the house we'd just left. Little hard on the old broad, weren't you? I listened to the phone ring as I pulled a folded piece of paper from the pocket of my coat and studied it. It was quite a performance. You're not buying it? The phone continued to ring. Not particularly. She studied me for a moment and then shrugged. So why do we need an Office Depot? The phone rang some more. So I can make a copy of this bank statement that says most of these ATM withdrawals in the last month were made at the Buffalo Gold Rush Casino in Deadwood, South Dakota. Some very large withdrawals. I turned to look at her just as somebody, a very angry somebody in Philadelphia, answered the phone in a tone of molten righteousness and wounded indignity. Hello? I could almost hear the exclamation points as I put on my best nonchalant voice. Hi, punk, you looking for me? Chapter 8. So, bad. I nodded. Pretty bad, yep. Have you called her since the one-legged bandit waylaid you? Once, twice, with just now. Vic cradled her face in her hands. Oh, Walt. I kept thinking I'd get out of here. I looked past Dog, now sitting between us. Which is why I have to get this wrapped up by the end of the week when the two of us are going to have to get to Philadelphia. She raised her head, brushing a wide swoop of black hair from her face, and looked at me. Do you have a ticket? An airline ticket? She glanced at the clock on my dash and tapped it. If you take the bus, you're going to have to leave now. I nodded and took a right on 85 onto the snowpack that was Main Street and then headed down the hill into Deadwood. She says I have one for noon. Vic shook her head and looked out the window at the snow that was continuously falling, along with some freezing fog. We'll need to get me one. She looked up at the curtains of flakes falling gold in the illumination of the streetlights. That is, if anybody's flying. Deadwood, South Dakota, is a tourist town, and like most tourist towns, doesn't look its best off-season. But the architecture has been preserved here, and when snow covers the globed streetlights, I can almost see Bill Hickok, Calamity Jane, and Seth Bullock sauntering down the avenues of my imagination. You've never been here?
No, but I saw the TV series.
There was a TV series set in Deadwood?
Yeah, I liked it. They said fuck a lot.
It had been a hard-fought battle getting here, and a South Dakota highway patrolman had pulled me over near Spearfish only long enough to tell me I was nuts. I crept up Deadwood's snow-covered brick streets and pulled my truck in front of the Franklin Hotel. As a valet came out to meet us, he looked at the stars and bars.
You're in the wrong state.
Vic and Dog were already at the door of the hotel when I handed him the keys. I think of myself as having a wide-reaching jurisdiction. Inside, I caught up with the dynamic duo at the registration desk, where Vic was arguing with the young woman on duty wearing a name tag that read Brittany as to whether Dog would be allowed to lodge with us.
He's house-trained, Vic glanced back at me, which is more than I can say for this one.
I put my billfold and my new badge wallet on the wooden surface of the antique counter, and had to admit that my badge looked a lot better in the hand-tooled leather holder that Basel the Elder had made for me, and I liked the fact that it wasn't flopping around on the Turkish carpet like a dying trout. I thought about the big Colt Walker in the center console, but then remembered that I'd locked it and flipped it back so as not to draw attention. Brittany, I'm Walt Longmire, and I'm working a case and need a room for the three of us. Vic smiled and pulled out her own wallet, multi-badging the young woman.
With a tub, please, and don't make me get Dog's badge out, too.
Brittany blinked once and then took 2 keys from a drawer and handed them to us as I gave her a credit card. She stood on tiptoe, looking at the beast.
He doesn't bark, does he?
Not unless I sing, and I promise not to sing. I reached down to ruffle Dog's ears, letting him know I was abandoning him to Vic. I'm going to head over to the Buffalo Gold Rush and spot the ATM. Can I have one of the photos of Roberta Payne? She fished into the folder under her arm and brought out the most recent picture, the one from her Employee of the Month plaque at the Flying J.
I'm going up and taking a bath. I'd be willing to take a shower if you'd join me, but I know you won't. So I'm going to sink into nice, warm bubbles and await your return.
I won't be long.
She pulled at Dog's ear. Come on, Rin-Tin-Tin, let's see what we can find in the minibar.
I watched her lay a hand on the brass railing and flounce up the stairs with Dog in tow, and wondered what the heck I was doing staking out ATMs at close to midnight in a blizzard. Turning and tugging my hat down, I flipped up the collar of my sheepskin coat. The valet opened the door and watched me walk out into the fogged-over blizzard. Fortunately, the casino was only across the street about a block up, but I still had a quarter inch of snow on my shoulders and hat by the time I got there. I shook off in the entryway and looked at the Hello Officer red Corvette that somebody could win if he or she wrestled the one-armed bandits to the ground. Continuing into the din of electronic gambling, I made my way toward the cage that read House and asked the man sitting on a stool where the nearest cash machines might be.
Whole bank of 'em behind this wall and around the corner. I can run a debit card from here, though, if you need money.
I shook my head. That's okay. Walking as he'd directed me, I studied the half-dozen cash machines, then spotted a blackjack table within eyesight and decided to set up camp as long as the $87.43 in my pockets held out. Having returned Roberta's original bank statement onto the threshold between the storm and regular doors of the Payne home, in hopes that Sadie would think she'd dropped it, I pulled the copy and noted the days of the week and the times of the withdrawals. There were a number of transactions in Gillette, but they were within the amounts that Sadie had mentioned, whereas the withdrawals that had been made here in Deadwood were much more substantial and growing more so. I pulled out my pocket watch. The days of the activity were random, but the times were not, all of them pretty much this time of night and within 20 minutes of each other. Making a quick trip back to the cashier, I watched my real money transform itself into colorful plastic chips, and I strolled across the thick carpet back toward the vantage point I'd assigned myself at the blackjack table. There was a chubby croupier with a beard, a bow tie, sleeve guards, a brocade vest, and a name tag that read Willie, dealing cards to an east-of-the-Missouri-River farmer type, a brassy-looking blonde, and a broad-backed Indian. There were two guys sitting over at the bar, but other than that, the place was deserted. Covertly slipping my holstered sidearm off my belt, I stuffed it into the sleeve of my coat and draped the sheepskin over the back of a stool next to the Indian, took off my hat, tapping it against my leg just to make sure that I didn't drip onto the elaborate red felt, and took a seat. "Mind if I join you?" Willie smiled a baby-faced smile, probably wishing that we would all go home so that he could follow suit, and announced, "New player." I piled my chips in separate stacks and nodded toward the farmer and the blonde, who I assumed was his wife, and turned to look at the big Indian who had the most chips. He in turn looked at the dealer and nodded toward me.
"I do not like his looks. He seems like the kind of man who cheats at cards."
I anted up. "Willie, has this Indian been drinking?" The chubby man looked a little worried.
No, sir."
"Well, let's get him started. Give him a red wine. He looks like a red wine kind of guy."
Willie raised his hand, motioning toward a middle-aged woman. Her name tag said Star.
"What'll it be, gentlemen?"
She was dressed in a kind of French maid outfit and uncomfortable spike heels and didn't look any happier than Willie at our reluctance to leave the table. The big Indian spoke to her first.
"Cabernet Sauvignon, s'il vous plaît."
She glanced at me and I stared back at her.
Beer.
What kind?"
I took a moment to respond, then straightened my chips and took a calculated guess.
"You got Rainier, Star?"
"No."
I smiled. "Iced tea, then." The croupier announced the game and began dealing cards.
"Blackjack, ladies and gentlemen, $5 minimum bet."
He tossed the farmer's wife a king, the farmer a 7, me a 3, a 9 for the Indian, and finally a 9 for himself, adding to his 25% to 2% advantage.
"Lady has a king,"
she grinned, her dentures shining.
"Hit me."
He threw her a 7, and she sat pat. The next was an 8 for the farmer. He brushed his fingers on the felt and was obliged with another 8, which carried him over the hill. I stabbed the 3, and the dealer laid a jack on it. I tapped again, and was rewarded with a 6. I looked at his ace, and decided what the hey. I tapped, and he sent me along with the farmer with a 7. Oh, well. The dealer pitched an 8 to the big Indian, who stared at his cards and then pointed at the dealer with his lips. The croupier paused for a moment, then flipped him another that skimmed along on a carpet of stale air, a deuce. He looked up at the dealer with a smile as thin as a paper cut. Willie gave himself a 7. The next card was a 10, and he followed the farmer and me down the road. I watched as he deposited the chips in front of the Indian's pile. The farmer and his wife rose, and the older man laid a hand on my shoulder.
"You high rollers are too much for us. We're headed for bed."
I smiled back at him. "Good night. Be careful out there."
"Oh, we're just down the street in the hotel. We're walking."
"Still be careful. You could cut sheep out of the air with a pair of shears."
"We will."
I watched the older couple pull on their coats as the waitress arrived with our drinks, and I gave her a chip as a tip. "Keep us topped off, would you?"
"Sure."
The dealer was getting anxious as he looked at the Indian and then at me.
"Another hand, gentlemen?"
I nodded and turned to Henry Standing Bear as we both anted up. "What the hell are you doing in Deadwood?" The Cheyenne Nation nodded his head at Willie. "I am feeling lucky." As the croupier dealt cards to the 3 of us, the bear smiled at me. "And besides, both Vic and Katie left me messages this afternoon. They worry about you." We played a few more hands, and he explained, "Since I was already in Pine Ridge." He gestured around him. "I decided to stop by." Willie interrupted, ready to unload a few more cards.
5 for the cowboy, king for the Native American, and a 3 for the house."
Henry sipped his wine. "Why, if you do not mind my asking, are you here?" I tapped the 5 and got another one. "Looking for a missing woman." I tapped again and landed an 8. "Hold." I pulled the photograph from my coat pocket and unfolded it on the table between us. "Roberta Payne, ring any bells?" He studied it and then nodded his head toward the other room. "I would say she bears an uncanny resemblance to the woman with the man at the ATM machine over there." The bear pursed his lips at the dealer again and got a 3 of spades. He lip-pointed once more and got an 8 of clubs, smiled the razor smile, and passed his hand over the cards as a blessing.